It's Friday night. What places are you heading to for post-work happy hour? Tell us. This podcast is making a best of the best list and needs recommendation for happy hour menus at restaurants in KC. Text us at 816-601-4777. That's 816-601-4777. Standard texting rates apply.
From KCUR, this is Up to Date with Steve Kraske. I'm the show's intern, Lauren Texter. More than half of U.S. adults say that they have listened to an audiobook at some point. Today, our panel of audiobook experts share their top picks for accessible and enjoyable listening. Jennifer Dowell is the managing editor at Audiophile magazine. Emily Pike Stewart is a Grammy and Audi Award-winning narrator, as well as the host of the Nomad Narrator podcast, where she interviews audiobook professionals. Andy Garcia is an audiobook narrator based in Kansas City.
Audiobooks are, you know, lauded for their accessibility for listeners, but I'm wondering if you found the industry to be just as accessible for narrators. Andy, you're relatively new to this field. What are your thoughts?
Well, coming into it from a person coming from a disability background, I did initially find some challenges with accessibility from a performance standpoint.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, because behind the scenes of creating an audiobook, there's a lot of technical things, working with companies, producers, publishers. And at first, maybe they didn't think about the accommodations that someone with a disability might need in order to make those audiobooks happen.
So you mean it's not just as simple as sitting down in front of a microphone and just flapping your gums for a few hours?
Oh, I wish. I wish it were that simple.
Yeah. Well, Emily, you were in Kansas City in October 2023 to interview another audiobook narrator. That was Sarah Smith Nessel for your podcast. You were already narrating audiobooks when you started the podcast, Emily. What inspired you to double dip in this field and start traveling around to speak with other narrators in their hometowns?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked about this. So one of my favorite things about the industry today is how available it is to people compared to when I started. I actually have been narrating audiobooks since I was in high school. And when I first got into the sort of commercial side of the industry, it still was very much the case that you had to be in one of the major markets like New York or Los Angeles or possibly Chicago. And when the COVID pandemic hit, home studios were already becoming a thing, but it really sort of turned the industry upside down. And these days, home studio recording is kind of the most prevalent way that audiobooks are recorded. So in a way, it sort of took this industry that had been located in two places and it completely spread it out across the country and really even all around the world. And I just was really fascinated by this idea of, you know, I'm from Kentucky. And when I was living in New York as an actor, I always kind of thought like, oh, gosh, there's this big pull between where I'm from and where the work is that I want to do. And it was always kind of a back and forth. And these days, that choice is not as difficult because people can live where they love and do what they love. So I was really fascinated by how these places that shape us shape who we are as creatives and what we bring to the table as storytellers. And I really just wanted to do something that would sort of highlight the unique creative spirits and human voices that make up this industry today.
You mentioned that you got started in this in high school. How did that happen?
So I went to a Catholic high school, and we had a really high requirement for service hours. And there was a branch of a nonprofit called Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, which today has evolved into Learning Ally. And I went there with my Girl Scout troop for a meeting and learned how to record the books. And I just was really fascinated by it and thought it was a lot of fun. So for about 2 years, my junior and senior year of high school, every week I would go there and record for 2 hours and really kind of learned how to do everything. And then after college, throughout college, I continued to record for them while I was in New York, and they had another branch up there. And then after I graduated, I sort of found my way into the professional side of the industry.
Okay, we have this clip now from the Nomad Narrator podcast where Emily is talking to Sarah Smith Nessel. Let's listen.
Let me tell you a story.
Oh, look, you've got your little bumper sticker.
Jerry has
so the line is right there.
The line is right where the... I mean, oh my gosh, and I can smell the barbecue.
Yeah.
Oh, that smells so good.
Do we want to still try to get on this? I think we should try to get on the streetcar. But
I think so, too.
If you want to
leave, Kansas City.
I had in mind when I thought, oh, let's go show Emily the city.
It was once an idea that someone just continued to believe in until they brought it to me.
When we were kids, we would sit for hours and hours and hours
lost
and
in
read
it.
And read. I mean,
I also hope everything goes well for us both.
Hey there! Welcome to the Nomad Narrator. It's me, your host and creator, Emily.
Well, Emily, how was that barbecue?
Very, very good. And I actually got to share some of it with Andy, too. She joined us on that. Her episode will be coming out soon. It just hasn't aired yet.
Where did you go for barbecue that day? Do you remember?
I think we went to
Jack Stack.
Jack Stack?
Yes.
Well, that's a good place to go.
So I was told you can't go wrong with them. But I look forward to, in the future, exploring some other barbecue venues as well.
Well, we have plenty to offer you, Emily. There's no shortage of it. Jennifer, you've been with Audiophile for more than 20 years now. What's changed the most about audiobooks and their listenership during that time?
Oh, gosh. Well, as you said, the latest survey from the Audio Publishers Association showed that so many people listen to audiobooks now. You know, there's just, I think because there's such an appetite for them, there's really no shortage of new stuff coming out, not only brand new books. You know, pretty much every new book has an audiobook also. But, you know, they're digging deep into the classics, the backlist, things that maybe have never been on audio before, just to try to feed people's hunger for having things to listen to.
Are you surprised by that, Jennifer, this notion that audiobooks have taken off the way they have? I mean, 20, 25 years ago, would that have surprised you?
When I started at Audiophile, which was almost 25 years ago now, they were already pretty popular, so they've only continued to grow. You know, I think it just fits into people's lives in a way, and I don't know if you've ever listened to an audiobook. You know, it's really great. So it's not surprising, really, that once people have discovered them, that they stick with them and want more of that and fit it into their lives.
You know, Andy, what's the key to good narration here? Because I got to tell you, a number of years ago, the Kansas City Public Library invited me down to narrate, I think, a Huckleberry Finn. I think that was the book. And what struck me about the experience was it was a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be. I mean, so what's the key to good narration?
I think it's honestly really being connected to the text, to the characters, understanding the author's intention with what they're trying to convey to the listener or the reader. And so it takes a lot of prep work behind the scenes before I even get behind the mic to actually perform it.
Prep work, like what do you do to get
ready? So whenever I'm prepping a manuscript, I get the book in advance. I read the whole book. And as I'm reading, I'm not just, I personally, because I'm a fast reader, I'll read the whole book for pleasure as if I were a consumer to see what my experience is. But then I go through and I identify all the characters. I try to think of, what does this person sound like? What is their intention? What's their perspective, their worldview? And then I obviously have to prep if there's any accents or themes and character arcs throughout the story that I can convey.
I was going to say, do you have to bring that kind of affect to adopt their voices and make the whole thing work?
I mean, I do think there's two different styles of narration. There's a little bit more of a straightforward read where you could just kind of, you know, keep it all in the similar voices.
And what are you?
I'm a little bit more of a character voice person, so I love to have a pretty distinct differentiation between my characters so you can feel like you're watching a movie. That's kind of my goal, is that you can truly just immerse yourself in the listening experience for those people that need that visualization.
Emily, is there one form of narration that's more popular than the other? Is it the straightforward approach that Andy just mentioned, or is it the adopting the character's voices approach?
You know, I think it really is up to listener preferences, and people do feel very strongly either way. There's also the opportunity for things like multicast for those that like the, you know, the multiple voice aspect of it, that can even take that a little bit further in that direction. As far as genre, I think that like thrillers, romance, those are huge genres. And so those have a lot of character work in them, as opposed to something like nonfiction. I think that people do really want to identify with characters. And if they are able to do that more so with their own imagination, they might like a more straightforward read. And if they really love the idea of, you know, being kind of immersed in this experience of the story that someone else is bringing to them, then I think they might lean a little bit more toward liking the different voices.
Andy, how long does it take you to record, you know, let's say a medium length book of fiction?
So I would say I've got a pretty strict 2-to-1 ratio, we'll call it. So for every hour of finished audio, like when you're listening to an audiobook in that 1 hour, it'll take me 2 hours to record that 1 hour.
Really? Because you're starting and stopping.
Yeah, so
making me feel better, because when I did Huck Finn, I was a lot of starting and stopping.
It is. And so all of us who have professional home studios, if we're doing it at our house versus in the studio, which is a whole different thing, you know, we are also our own directors. So we have to start and stop. We have to try to catch ourselves. Oh, that was an error. Let me punch back in and redo that line. Or sometimes we even look at it from a performance like, I didn't like that take. Let me do that again and see if I can get a better read on that line. Wow. So that adds up over time.
Does that time commitment, Emily, that Andy just outlined, the same amount of time you spend on it?
For the most part, yes. I will say it really does vary from narrator to narrator. So some people might have, a 2-to-1 ratio is actually pretty good. And I think that most people would actually have something a little broader than that. Although I don't know if that would include prep and that kind of thing, you know, as Andy mentioned. You read the book first and you go through, you know, your character choices and any voices you might want to use or any research you might have on pronunciations and that kind of thing. So all of that, when you add it together, when you think about one finished hour of audio, it might take anywhere from 2 to 10 hours that go into that 1 hour of audio.
Amazing. Jennifer, what makes for a good narration?
Well, that's the entire reason that Audiophile magazine exists,
right?
to try to answer that question. You know, as it was mentioned, it really is about the narrator connecting with the text and then translating that for the listener. And right, genre makes a huge difference. You're not going to narrate a romance the same way you're going to narrate a work of serious nonfiction. And it shouldn't be narrated the same, of course. But yeah, it's really about, I think, giving voice to the characters in a way that makes it believable. And just communicating in a very clear and compelling way what the author has put down on the page.
Why is there a need for an audiophile magazine, Jennifer? What's how much interest is there in this whole world that you occupy?
Well, the reason that we started was really to help libraries in the very beginning, because, of course, libraries have limited budgets for buying any products, including audiobooks. And so we wanted to say, okay, these are the ones that are really good. Spend your money on these. Well, now, of course, audiobooks are so popular with consumers, but it's the same idea. You know, if you have one credit a month to spend, or you have one book that you're going to get on the hold list at the library, we are just trying to tell you, you know, maybe skip this one, but this one is really fabulous. Be sure to listen to that one.
Okay, well, we have a whole bunch of audiobook recommendations that we're going to run through now. And Emily, we're going to start with you, and we'll start with The Nature of Disappearing by Kimmy Cunningham Grant. Tell us about it.
Okay, so this is my first pick because it's actually at the forefront of my mind. I just finished narrating it, so it actually isn't even out yet. It comes out on June 18th. I'm sharing this with permission from Macmillan Audio. They told me it was okay to share the clip. This is a suspense thriller. And the main character, her name is Emlyn. She's a wilderness guide and a tracker in the wilds of Idaho. And throughout the course of the book, she's forced to reunite with the man who broke her heart and left her half dead in the woods, because their friend Janessa, who happens to be a van life social media starlet, has gone missing on one of her backcountry trips. And getting cast on this book was just kind of a neat coincidence, because a couple years I actually, you know, bought my van and turned it into a camper and recording studio for the Nomad Narrator. So the producer knew that and sent me the audition, and then the author selected me for the book. So that was a neat turn of events. So I really fell in love with this book in particular because of the author's ability to create these vast landscapes, both externally with the wilderness around them and within her characters. So the story and the people in it just really pulled me along from the first words all the way to the end.
What was the particular challenge of narrating this one?
I really felt like these characters were so real that I wanted to be sure that I did them justice with all of their dialogue, that it didn't come across as that nothing kind of mushed together and felt too similar, and that also they didn't feel like caricatures in any way. Sometimes you can lean sort of toward one or the other as you go through the whole process of recording this very long book. And so I really wanted to take my time and make sure that all of their dialogue really sounded like them individually as real, clear people.
Well, let's listen to a clip here from The Nature of Disappearing by Kimmy Cunningham Grant.
Someone approaches and stands close by. Customers like to watch. Sometimes they ask to buy the very one she is making, so they can say they saw the guide tie it, as though that somehow makes it more authentic. Or luckier, maybe. Hello, she says, threading the bobbin with dark brown waxed thread. She does not look up. She wraps the thread around the shank of the hook and then begins to spin the bobbin round and round and round. Soon the customer will ask a question or two. Soon they will compliment her. They will marvel at how she works so quickly, the steps and movements memorized. She knows the conversation. But a presence, a scent, a tingle rolls up her spine. Hello, Em. That voice. Tyler.
Well, Emily, that's why you're a pro. That was very well done. So that's The Nature of Disappearing by Kimmy Cunningham Grant. Okay. Well, Andy, let's come to your first recommendation, and this is Peel My Love Like an Onion by Anna Castillo.
Yeah. Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, this was a really awesome book that I got cast in, and I was really, really excited to narrate it. It's written by Anna Castillo, and she's a really amazing author, famous in the Chicana literature, women's lit fic. I believe she's based in Chicago. She's won a lot of awards. And I think what I really loved about this was I was able to kind of step into a world with somebody who also has a disability and go through an example of what their life was like. So I really related to this character in a lot of ways. Also with the whole like Nidia ki Nidia, she like didn't really fit into any world with her Hispanic background too. So it was an amazing, amazing book.
Well, let's listen to a clip here from Peel My Love Like an Onion by Anna Castillo.
By your unkind relatives and strangers on the street, and even waiters in restaurants, when they overhear your whispered English and wince at your bad Spanish. Still, you try, at least. You try like no one else on earth tries to be in two places at once. Being pocha means you try here and there, this way and that, and still, you don't fit, not here and not there.
And so I'm getting the picture here. You're recording this in your home studio.
Mm-hmm.
You're by yourself. There's no one in your ear saying, redo. You're your own editor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How tough on yourself do you have to be?
Oh, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty tough on myself. I really love it. But I also just try to stay present in the moment because I think it's you run a real risk of being like, oh, it could always be better, right? And I'll be honest with you, I've done sessions with, you know, the publishing companies, like one of the big five, and done the directed sessions, and I'll do a retake, and they'll be like, why'd you retake that? It sounded just fine the way it was the first time. I was like, go with your gut. So
really?
I've learned that lesson too.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, Jennifer Dowell, let's go to you here. Your first book is The Breakup List by a Kansas City author too, right?
Yes, that's by Adib Karam, who I love his books, and I think I've listened to every single one of them on audio. And The Breakup List is his newest one, and it's a teen rom-com kind of a thing. It's very, very sweet. And the protagonist's name is Jackson, and he's a junior in high school, and he's his stage manager for the high school theater department, and he absolutely loves it. And then he makes a new friend who then becomes maybe more of a friend in Liam from the swim team, who ends up getting the lead role in the new musical. So they spend a lot of time together. And he's just an interesting protagonist because he's gay, he's deaf, and he's just adorable. And the narrator does a really wonderful job, I think, giving very believable voice to Jackson.
Okay, well, let's listen to an example of that creative adaptation. Here's The Breakup List.
Man Bun Nick's Breakup List. A crusty sock in human form. Scratch that. Too much Axe body spray. Not enough to cover the weird smell. Scratch that. Smacks his lips at the beginning of each sentence. Doesn't like pickles. Always looks like he's holding in a fart. Scratch that. Bad man bun. It barely even qualifies as a bun. More like a little man garlic knot or something. Plus, there's the whole thing where he broke up with you, I point out.
Jennifer, you must be absolutely inundated with audiobooks. How do you sort of sort through the volume that you receive? And you must be listening to books all the time.
It's a lot. Well, thankfully, I don't have to do it all myself. We have about 100 reviewers who are spread out all over the country and some even international. So yes, we get a huge volume of audiobooks coming in all the time. And so, yeah, we, I try to go through and find the things that I think sound most interesting. We also get a lot of input from narrators saying, hey, I just recorded this one. I thought it was really special. You know, you guys should take a look at it, which we love. And then we assign them out to all of our reviewers who have, you know, different genres that they sort of specialize and enjoy. So we always try to really match up, you know, the type or genre of the audiobook with our reviewer, who then can give it a really, you know, professional review.
Well, that culling process that you just referred to, that's what critical in many cases for the success of any one audiobook. That's a pretty important part of what you do, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and it's hard because, of course, there are so many things. I'm sure there are wonderful things that we miss just because there's so much out there. And even though we review about 200 audiobooks a month, there's so many more than that, of course, being published every month. You know, a lot of it, frankly, comes down to my own personal interest and what I think looks fascinating. I look at a lot of the lists of like big new titles coming out and buzzy titles and newsworthy titles and things like that, and just try to make sure that we're covering a wide swath of a variety of genres and, you know, hopefully not missing any wonderful ones.
Are there some books that are narrated by folks who are regarded as being in the top tier of narrators around the country? Do you automatically always review those books, Jennifer?
I mean, they're going to get a leg up. We at Audiophile, we actually have our Golden Voices, which is kind of our narrator hall of fame. And actually in June, we will be inducting 3 new Golden Voices, but I cannot tell you who they are yet. Huh. That is a surprise coming up. But yes, you know, if I see an audiobook come through narrated by, say, Dion Graham, well, you know he's going to give an amazing performance. And so, yes, that would automatically go into our system and likely get picked up and reviewed.
How highly sought are these Golden Voices that you just mentioned, like Dion Graham?
Oh, very, very highly sought. Usually by the time they've become a Golden Voice in our eyes, you know, they've been working in the industry for a long time. They've really devoted a significant part of their acting career to audiobooks. You know, they have a real body of work that spans a lot of different genres and types of audiobooks. So yes, they're coveted for a reason, and they're always worth listening to.
I just wanted to mention one of those Golden Voices is Robin Miles. And if anyone would like to hear more from Robin about her craft or about the work that she's done, she's absolutely brilliant. And she happened to be in the second episode of The Nomad Narrator. So we talked for so long, we actually have 2 episodes with just her talking about her process and things she's worked on and how she got into audiobooks. And she's just phenomenal. So I just wanted to put that out there if anyone's interested in her work.
Emily, what do you recall about her process? What was distinctive about it to you? What stood out?
Oh, the amazing thing about Robin is just how dedicated she is to her craft as an actor. And I think that her work in the theater and all of her experience in that realm just seeps into all of her character work and her beautiful storytelling as a narrator. It's just phenomenal.
Andy, is your narration work, is this the principal source of your income, the only source? How would you describe it?
So in my previous life, I was a mental health therapist here in town for over a decade. I was even the behavioral health director for the Greater Kansas City Firefighters Department, their union.
Wow.
But I got in a car accident, sustained a traumatic brain injury, and had to retire as a therapist. And so when I was doing speech therapy and learning how to talk again, I would sit in my closet and read books to try to form those connections, like my eyes, my brain, my mouth, to talk. And it was instrumental in me learning how to talk again. And so after I was like, well, what am I going to do with my life now? I was like, oh, audiobooks. I've always loved them. I found an old note that said, in 5 years, narrate an audiobook and publish your book that you've written. And so I reached out to a really well-known and respected narrator. And I was like, hey, would you be my mentor? Help me bust into this industry? And that's how I kind of moved into it.
So wait a minute. So you were in this accident. You had to learn how to read again. And now you are a professional narrator.
I know, from somebody who didn't even talk. Yes.
Was it literally you were coming back from nowhere?
Mm-hmm. Ground up like the phoenix rising from the ashes.
Wow.
So yeah. So I'm like literally, I'm on disability. This is my life. And so this is the one thing that I do that brings me joy. And so it's like, it's literally keeps me alive. It gives me a purpose in life. So even though I do this, quote, full time, I probably do as much as somebody else's part-time just because of my limitations with my disability. But I love it, and it's my everything.
Well, that's quite a comeback story. Good for you.
Thanks.
Congratulations. Thanks. Yeah.
We'll get back to Steve's conversation about audiobooks in just a moment.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
Emily, let's go to a book I'm really curious to hear you talk about, which is Surrender by U2's Bono. Tell us about it.
Okay, so this audiobook has been my obsession and recommendation for the last year and a half.
Wow.
It is just a boundary-breaking creation in this industry, I really think.
How
and,
so?
Okay, so co-producers Dan Zitt and Scott Sherritt just did a phenomenal job. I think in particular Scott, because he also directed it and he worked with Bono on this. But they took so much of U2's music and isolated different tracks and remastered things and re-recorded new vocals and right. integrated this throughout the entire audiobook. So Bono wrote this beautiful book. And it's my understanding that he actually, you know, many celebrity authors will work with a ghostwriter or someone to sort
but
of
he actually wrote this thing. Yeah.
It's my understanding that that is the case. And wow, is he an incredible poet and storyteller. So the book itself is phenomenal. And listening to it in his voice, which is, you know, one of the most celebrated voices in the history of humanity, is just such a special experience. And then to get to hear all of these different pieces of his music and of his history that are just sort of woven in so expertly throughout the whole thing. The book is 20 hours long. It's over 20 hours long, and there is not a wasted minute of it.
Wow. Let's listen to a little clip here from Bono's new book, Surrender.
I hear the ancient footsteps, like the motion of the sea. Sometimes I turn, there's someone there. At times, it's only me. Bob Dylan said that. Part one. I can't change the world, but I can change the world in me. That's me. SFX Theatre, Dublin, December 1982.
It shouldn't be here because I should be there. I can see the lights in front of me. I believe my best days are ahead. I can see the lights in front of me.
Man, they were good right out of the gate, weren't they, Emily? Really good.
Yes.
Yeah. Special book there, recommendation from Emily, Surrender by Bono, the lead singer of U2. Andy, let's go back to this mystery of the six crosses that is the story about what happened to the firefighters, the six firefighters who lost their lives in that explosion back in the late 80s in South Kansas City. You're just starting this work, narrating this book today.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So this is... if you're a local Kansas City and you've probably heard everything about this case, and it's in the fire culture, unheard of to lose six lives in the line of duty at a time.
Yeah.
So this is a big deal. And if you drive down 71 Highway, you'll see those six crosses
yes.
still to this day over on the side of the highway. And this was written by the special agent David True, who's in charge of the case. This is actually his last case of his career as a special agent. And this was a long, cold case, and it took many years before they got their people in to have the trial, the charges, and the arrests, and then the imprisonment.
And then so much controversy that lingers even to this day who actually was responsible for the deaths of those firefighters
yes,
that morning.
Yes, there's people in the community, there's people just, you know, how the world gets with, hey, what about this and that? And so there's a lot of questions about, was there more people involved? Do we know all the facts? And so the author of this book, Special Agent David True, he wrote down from every single thing about his investigation, the criminals, what proof he had, and why this has come to the end of this mystery of the six crosses. The whodunit has been solved.
And so many thousands of people who were around in Kansas City in the late 80s remember that morning so well, being woken up in the middle of the night, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock
yes.
in the morning by the
explosions.
And I remember vividly as a reporter getting out of bed, taking off, just driving into the darkness, not knowing where I was going, but knowing that something was very wrong in town that morning. Yeah.
Yes.
Jennifer, let's come to your second recommendation here. And this is Birding with Benefits by Sarah T. Dubb.
Oh yeah, so this is a romance, and it actually doesn't come out until June, but we got a very early copy of it, so I got to listen to it. I was drawn to this in part because I am also a birder, and I thought, well, a birding and romance together, that sounds great. And it's narrated by two narrators, as quite common in romance audiobooks, because the book is written from the point of view of the two protagonists, so they switch off narrating. And the male narrator, Evan Sibley, is actually the son of David Allen Sibley, who's a very famous author of bird guides.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
So I was just intrigued by it, but it was just such a charming story, and you get the combination of this very swoony romance with all this really beautiful description of being outdoors. It's set in Arizona, and so there's, you know, they're out there, they're doing this bird watching contest basically together. These two people have been thrown together, so there's just a lot of time spent out in nature and the descriptions of that, even as they're falling for each other. So it was a fun one.
Do you think this book might bring birding to younger audiences out there?
I think so. It certainly makes it sound very appealing. So if it's something that you've never tried, you might be intrigued after listening to this.
Yeah. Andy, I forgot to ask you, when will this Mystery of the Six Crosses book, might it be out, or do you even know yet?
So we are at, what, almost the end of April?
Right.
So it should be releasing here within the next month.
Oh, really? That mm-hmm. quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Even though you're starting the narration today?
Yep.
You're putting pressure on yourself.
Oh,
here.
No. We have a very strict formula. We can take how many words are in the book and then divide that and figure out how long it's going to take us to actually record it.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Russ from Kansas City, Kansas. Russ, you're on Up to Date. Welcome.
Thank you. I thought I would recommend, there's an author in Britain named Ben Aronovich who has written many books, but an overarching series of novels called, well, by the general title of Rivers of London, that's how to find it. I can't remember the name of the first one. I've heard so many of them, but look them up. The narrator nails British culture and the characters perfectly. It's as funny as anything has been since Douglas Adams left us, and it's written for adults, which is not to say that it is salacious, but that it is not juvenile. It's a really good listen for anybody about 17 and up.
Jennifer, does that one ring a bell with you?
Yes, I mean, it's quite a big series. I haven't personally listened to any of them, but I know that they are sort of fan favorites out there.
Russ, I appreciate the recommendation. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks for the show.
You bet. Ed and Miriam. Ed, welcome to Up to Date. I think he had a question about, are there books that are more difficult to read aloud because they were meant to be text only? Great question. Emily, what do you think?
So one of my favorite things about my job, because right now I'm also currently a full-time audiobook producer and director for a publisher, we have a commitment to trying to make any visual materials that might present a challenge to turn into audio, that we would like to try to make everything accessible to visually or print disabled listeners. So sometimes that includes taking things like charts or images or that kind of thing and writing descriptions of them. And then sometimes, as I think this question might be asking, it means kind of reworking some of the text in a way that might make a little bit more sense if it's recorded audibly. So performing that kind of translation service from text to audio is a unique challenge in some instances, and it can be incredibly rewarding.
Well, Andy, you have another recommendation here, Disability Intimacy by Alice Wong, and I gather you had some personal interest in this.
Oh, yes. This was a really wonderful book that's coming out soon from Penguin Random House, and it's an anthology. And with Alice Wong's book, she really brings to light the experiences of people from the disability community. And the sections that I got to narrate were just, like you said, so personally relatable, talking about, you know, walking through the medical system, walking through what it's like to have your support network change and people change as you have this new disability within you.
Wow. Okay. And that book, again, titled Disability Intimacy by Alice Wong. Jennifer, let's turn back to you again and go to The Mars House by Natasha Polley.
Oh, gosh. So this is I just found this so compelling. Sort of like Bono's book, this one is 18 and a half hours long. But I couldn't stop listening. It's a sci-fi political thriller. It's set mostly on Mars. It's in the future. And basically, Earth is being ravaged by climate change. And so some refugees are going to Mars, where there have been several generations now of settlements set up there. And it's fascinating. The world building is absolutely fascinating. And the narrator, Daniel Dubourg, he has a really lovely British accent. And interestingly, he doesn't do a lot of different character voices, but something about the quality of his narration and his style, it's very sort of confiding. It's very conversational in a way, and it just propels you through the listen.
We have a clip here from the Mars House. Let's check it out.
London always flooded, had done for decades. People had got the hang of it, moved upward, and started doing scuba diving tours of the lost lower floors for tourists. The jewelers run by Covent Garden kept boats moored at Farringdon Dock, formerly Farringdon Station, where what had once been railway platforms now served nicely as wharves, so they could move their stock fast if the waters rose. And just like they had in centuries past, shops and houses and restaurants had begun to populate the higher Thames bridges. It had become a trinkety sort of place, full of rare bookshops and once grand theatres, and locals who were locked in a war with the massive cruise ships that kept knocking the frilly bits off the Houses of Parliament. When January was little, it had been the sort of place where people came on holiday to see the glittering ruins at Canary Wharf that sank deeper into the river silt every year. He had grown up knowing that the city was sinking, but somehow he never thought it would one day be sunken.
That's from The Mars House by Natasha Pulley. And, you know, you mentioned as we were talking about this one, Jennifer, that this is an 18-and-a-half-hour book. What I've always wondered about, my wife's a huge audiobook fan. She's listening while she's making dinner and everywhere else. Where do you find that people wind up listening to these things? Because the trick for me has always been, can you keep track of a book while you're doing something else? Because that's what most people seem to be doing, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a great, audiobooks are a great multitasking tool, but you're right. You have to be able to be paying attention to both things that you're doing. Obviously, you know, they've traditionally been a huge thing people listen to on their commutes. Of course, commuting life has changed a bit in the past few years. I think that a lot of people don't necessarily have the same kind of commutes they used to. I'm a knitter, so I do a lot of my listening while I'm knitting because I find that I can, pay attention to both of those things at the same time for the most part. You know, there's as you say, you can listen while you're cleaning the house, while you're doing the dishes, while you're out for a walk.
I'm just guessing that over the years, you've heard of some really unusual places that people wind up doing their listening.
Oh, gosh, I'm sure. I mean, in the garden is not unusual, but I have definitely heard a lot of people who listen while they're gardening, while they're walking the dog. Well, actually, we have in our upcoming issue of the magazine, we have an interview with Whoopi Goldberg, who has narrated her own memoir about her mother and her brother. And she is a huge, huge audiobook fan. And she says in her book that she basically doesn't sleep. And she just listens to audiobooks all night. She loves them. So she might not be the only one who's doing that.
Let's go to some calls. Cindy from Brookside. Cindy, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was just wondering, I don't know if you've already talked about it, but how could I find out more about getting into audio narration of actually doing it?
Andy, take that.
Yeah, there is a wonderful website called Narrator's Roadmap. Narrator's Roadmap has a wealth of information, and it's compiled by one of our own amazing narrators. Also, if you go to ACX, they have a lot of videos in their kind of master classes that give you like instructional things. And if you have an Audible membership or a Kindle, you can get my book for free, and it just says how to become an audiobook narrator. And it's literally my journey from beginning to now of what it looks like to become an audiobook narrator.
Emily, I bet you have something to add to that.
Yes, although I do think that Andy hit on the main one, which is narratorsroadmap.com. Karen Cummins is the narrator that Andy mentioned who has compiled this website. She and her husband operate it, and it is honestly just like a treasure trove wealth of information on how to get started in this industry. It has listings on any coaches that you might get in touch with. It has resources on casting directors and producers that you might want to reach out to, how to begin to think about producing your own demo, what it looks like to set up a home studio. Pretty much everything you are looking for, you can find it there. And there are also some free resources in terms of social media groups. There are Facebook groups for ACX narrators. ACX stands for the Audiobook Creation Exchange. And that was something that was started by Audible a while back. to pair independent narrators and authors with each other on independent projects. So those would be ones that aren't necessarily going through a known publisher. So that's a good place that a lot of people get their start. So yeah, I think those are great resources.
And Andy, like anything in life, there's probably a little more to this than meets the eye, as we talked about earlier.
I would
right?
say people do come into it thinking it's like you said, oh, I'm just reading a book. And they don't realize how steep the learning curve is, how much it really takes.
I can only imagine. I wanted to get to a couple more recommendations here because they sounded so good to me. Emily, you wanted to get to Return to the 100-Acre Wood by David Benedictus.
Yes. Okay. So this one is just, it has a special place in my heart. It was recorded in 2009, so it's a little older, but it is an instant classic that I think will last for many decades to come. This is narrated by Jim Dale, who some people might be familiar with as the narrator of the Harry Potter series, the American version of that. At one time, he actually held two Guinness World Records for his voiceover work, one for the most voices ever created in an audiobook. It was something like 150-something voices, individual voices in one of those Harry Potter books. And then another one, he held the top, I believe, 6 out of 10 spots for best audiobooks in the USA and Canada at one point. Wow. So he's quite the accomplished narrator. This book is really interesting because it was the first Winnie the Pooh sequel for a sequel for the Winnie the Pooh series to be approved by the estate of A.A. Milne in 80 years after the originals were created. And so I was working in the recording studio where this was recorded. As I said, after college, I moved into the sort of the professional side of audiobook narration. And this was recorded within the first, I believe, month of working in that studio. And it's actually the first professional audiobook I got to work on. I was the proofreader for it. So I did the quality control at the end of it. And I just think it's fantastic. It was a magical experience.
Did you know you wanted to go narrate books when you heard this one being done?
Oh, I think I already love narration before that, but there is something about a performance like this that just takes things to the next level.
Andy, let's go to one final one here, Maybe This Time by Kara Bastone.
Yes, this one is currently up for pre-order, and it's an Audible production. It is a really super cute multicast, kind of like a time travel rom-com. And even one of the narrators in here is Noah Reed, who people may know from Schitt's Creek. He plays the character of Patrick. It's super fun. And I think if anybody's looking for something kind of light and enjoyable that's got a lot of variety, kind of how she said, like some multicast, you're going to have different voices for different characters, this would be a fun one to listen to.
The book, again, Maybe This Time by Kara Bastone. Let's go to Carla from Kansas City, Missouri. Carla, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
One recommendation. I'm not a huge audiobook person, but I wish that I had read the first time or listened to an audiobook was Dave Grohl's The Storyteller.
Why did you like it?
Well, Dave Grohl, musician with Nirvana and Foo Fighters, and sound is his medium, and he just tells a great story.
That's The Storyteller by Dave Grohl. Great recommendation, Carla.
That was Steve Kraske in conversation with Jennifer Dowell, Emily Pike Stewart, and Andy Garcia. Up to Date is a production of KCUR, and this conversation was produced by me, Lauren Texter. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Hollywood writers are obsessed with the concept of an asteroid heading towards Earth and destroying civilization. But is this something we really should be worried about? I'm Kate the Chemist, and on my podcast, Seeking a Scientist, we meet the mastermind behind a real-life mission to divert the path of an asteroid. Subscribe to Seeking a Scientist, made possible by the Star Wars Institute.